This is tape 5, tape 5 of December 8, 1960. Now, Mr. President, could you give us a quick review of the next three presidents after President preceding Lincoln, summing up that period, characterizing each quickly?
Well, Fillmore, I think, was Taylor's vice president, if I'm not mistaken. And then came Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan. And those three men were peculiar in their lineup. Fillmore had been elected governor of New York in two ways, in the anti-Masonic, the anti-Masonic, and on the know-nothing ticket. And he was put on the program with Taylor because they thought he was the Democratic ticket in that, the Whig ticket in that part of New York, And he had no regular viewpoint because he changed with the wind. He'd been in three different parties. And as President of the United States, he didn't do anything that was worth pointing out. And then Franklin Pierce was nominated and elected on the Democratic ticket.
Fillmore, pardon me, Fillmore succeeded upon Taylor's death.
Taylor's death, yes, he was the vice president, the S.C. Taylor. And then he was succeeded by Franklin Pierce, who was a New Hampshire, who was in New and was well thought of nationally all over the country. And he family. He lost his son, other his wife never interested with him. But as president, very many things except the sign that was created the Kansas Nebraska Bill. That was the repeal of the compromise of the 1815 compromise. And that had more ending on the Civil War than any other Then Franklin Pierce was succeeded by James Buchanan, who had an idea, and that he ought to just be who sat there, and if the Congress, and then example has been followed by one or two other presidents, including the one that. And who is going out of office now? He never decision. And he made a decision.
On
Fort Sumter. I am as sure as I there would have been no thing on that fort. There might have been a postponement of the war between the states, but that postponement could not postponature the repeal of the Missouri Compromise and Missouri Compromise of 1850. So when Lincoln came into office, Lincoln, a situation that's something like the one that's being inherited right now, being inherited after Buchanan was the president of the do nothing presidents of the do nothing president. So there's nothing you can say about any of those men except young man to succeed Andrew Jackson sometime in the Jackson series.
Well, you had Polk come in there, and he did some pretty vigorous stuff.
Who's that? Polk was the only president who had the nerve to do what's necessary. But his successors, if you take old Taylor and Fillmore, Franklin Pierce, and James Buchanan, were all do-nothing presidents. Didn't have the nerve to make decisions.
Now, what was happening during that period? Was the country digesting all of the having to do with the new territories and so on, or were we just coasting, or didn't give a darn?
Everybody was worrying about slavery. They didn't give any consideration or ideas for the solution of that problem, and so between the states.
This would be the states. this was the atomic fallout issue of that period.
Well, worse than atomic fallout. It caused a war between us, and caused a war. People have never been killed in any of our wars.
Now, these three of our wars, did any of them concern all of the issue of slavery?
We were trying to prevent which things would be solved by compromise. And compromise. And then they were in trouble.
Taylor.
Fillmore. Phil McPierce. And Franklin Pierce.
That's 16 years. They're all one term. 16 years.
President. Or last. Taylor and Fillmore. One term.
During the period, did the theory of power gravity center legislative, did the legislative occupy a more disproportionate position?
Yes, I think it did, because no leadership was.
There were outstanding men in Congress at that time. Powerful.
Yes, they were powerful. Yes, there were great men and men in Congress, as old Ben Wade, and there was Stephen A. Douglas, and one or two others who were very,
very bold
in their appearances on the floor of the Congress, and while they didn't make any contribution to the welfare of the country, they helped to bring home the Civil War.
Mr. President, this period of 1856 to 1860, the Buchanan administration, is characterized as the drift toward disunion. And
that's right.
During that period that the Dred Scott decision came up, which had a good deal.
That's right. Well, the Dred Scott decision was made in St. Louis. And the records are in the courthouse in St. Louis right now. And, of course, that was just one instance in the whole layout that brought about the terrible situation which the country had to go through from 1860 to 1868.
Then, of course, there was the problem of the struggle of Kansas to pass it.
Well, that is the repeal of the repeal of the Missouri Compromise. Old Stephen A. Douglas's Kansas-Nebraska bill brought about that situation. That's what brought forth old John Brown and all the rest of the things.
As far as you're concerned, then, in connection with the history of the United States, the student did not concern himself too much with these four presidents.
No. He ought to, though, because they're vital.
And they're vital because you say that their failure to be good presidents.
That's right. Their
failure
to act as presidents of the United States brought on, to some extent, the war between the states.
Therefore, great importance attaches to the study, according to your viewpoint, because they brought about a breakdown.
That's right. They must study one of these administrations if they want to find out what's for the rest of the interest of the United States should one of them become president.
Would you be willing to generalize the words that finally take place are a consequence of weak men preceding the events or contributing to the events?
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Then would you go to the other conclusion and say that strong presidents have been successful in preventing war?
No, I wouldn't. Strong presidents have found it necessary sometimes to carry on a war to accomplish what the weak presidents left to them.
Well, they have to use the resort to war as a means of accomplishing, but that's a corrective thing, not necessarily an initiating thing.
I don't know.
All right.
Clarify what seems a bit confusion. The president's talking about the breakdown of government, which led to a civil war.
The
carrying out of the government in a way that all the states have cooperated. That led to a civil war. The wars you're talking about, wars outside of the United States for other purposes.
Well, we can go into that if we want to go back into Greek and Roman history.
Well, this does not involve the First and Second World War, the things that have occurred on the outside, but the conflicts on the inside, whether they resulted in war or strife or depression, They're all due to the failure of our president to take action in time.
Oh, yes, that's great.
All right?
That's absolutely correct.
That number we have.
All right. We'll see what
this is the end of tape 5, morning of December the 8th, 1960. President, this is the morning of December the 26th, and you suggested we'd like to talk about the Indians, and you were just talking about the man who was the battle or slaughtered the...
Black Kettleanis and his whole tribe were slaughtered in eastern Colorado by a colonel who was in command of the Colorado National Guard, and he was also instrumental in... doing some other things around over the country, and was pretty well thought of in his time, but I never thought much of a man who would, in cold blood, slaughter an old Indian and his whole family when they were moving, apparently, to the territory which had been set aside for him in Oklahoma.
And what these Indians were?
Black Kettle was the chief. They were a branch of the Sioux tribe.
Well, Mr. President, that brings me to a question of the ruthless slaughter and treatment by the early Spanish explorers of the natives and of the Indians.
Yes, it's a terrible thing. That history is particularly the slaughter that was carried on by Cortez in Mexico and Pizarro in Peru. They were ruthless in their treatment of the men who had organized one of the great empires of the history in the history of the world. They were wonderfully wise people, both the Aztecs and the Incas. And the Spaniards enslaved them, in fact, and were the first ones to introduce slavery in the on the American continent, not only by importing the Negroes from Africa, but also by enslaving the Indians who were already here. There were a great many of the Indian setups, governmental setups in this Western Hemisphere that were on an almost an ideal basis. You take the Iroquois in New York, where an organization of five Indian tribes, and was constituted the Five Nations, and they were organized in such a way that their representative government was almost parallel with the governments, with the government of the United States under the Constitution, with its states and its representatives in the national government and in the state governments. This Indian organization was an ideal system of government, and there was never any slavery in the Indian tribes themselves. Not even when they conquered did they make slaves out of the people that they did conquer. They may have tortured them and killed them under certain circumstances, but they were had some very great ideas of government and how it ought to run. But you take the treatment of the Indian tribes and the Indian chiefs by the white settlers of the American continent, both North and South America, was a horrible thing to contemplate. We had some great Indian chief leaders in the North American continent. There was Pontiac and Tecumseh. There was Chief Joseph and Geronimo. All of those men were fighting for the welfare of their people. And of course, they were fighting a losing battle from start to finish, just as the Montezuma and the great Inca, whom Pizarro conquered, did under the same circumstances. The superiority of weapons and the heartless approach which the white settlers, both North America and South America, made toward the Indians is a disgrace and always will be. Somebody, sometime, is going to be make a research of that situation and declare the facts as they took place.
What is interesting, Mr. President, is the lack of slavery seemed to indicate a very high regard which the Indians held even for the individual as such, for the dignity of the individual, even where the enemy was involved.
That's true. The individual in the great Indian tribes to which I have referred was a man of dignity and poise and had his right to his say before the council, and was always, his rights were always respected. The Indians also were very fond of children. They were very, very good to the youngsters as they grew up, and they tried to train them, both male and female, to the duties which they considered their proper place in life. Although they made the women do all the work and the heavy drudgery that was necessary to be carried on, after the women had become old, they were considered in the councils, at least that was true in the Iroquois tribes, as a part of the government of the country. And I think that the Indian women in the other tribes, after they reached a certain age, were looked up to and treated as proper counselors to be considered.
What about the significant that there was no slavery at all on in the Western Hemisphere?
No slavery at all in the Western Hemisphere at all.
Until Western Christianity came in.
Until the Spaniards and the British and the French came to this country, there was no slavery in the Western Hemisphere.
As I understand it, the nearest evaluation people can get of the number of people in the Western Hemisphere was about 5 million at the time.
That's the estimate. There were 5 million in the Western Hemisphere, and about 2 million of those were on the North American continent. The rest of them were in Mexico and in South America.
Why was the lust for gold so strong among the Spaniards, more so than perhaps of the others, or were they all equally that way?
They were all equally that way. They all thought that after the discovery of the Western Hemisphere by Christopher Columbus, who did not receive the proper credit for what he had done until long after he was dead, when his son wrote a life of him, the idea was to exploit that old Western Hemisphere and take everything and give nothing, and that's exactly what happened. And they were particularly, all of them, British, French, and Spanish, were all after gold. They found immense quantities of gold, both in Mexico and in Peru. It was all taken to Spain and was used by the great Spanish Empire at that time for its own exploitation in the Holy Roman Empire in Europe.
Mr. President, getting back to this five nation defensive union and government, it was amazing the way they paralleled even local government.
That's absolutely true. Their local governments were substantially independent. They were banded together for defense and protection. And they had a general government presided over by what would be parallel to our president of the United States, and a council. And then they had a war cabinet that also was international with regard to the five nations in its scope. But the local governments of those tribes were carried on just as if they did not have a federal national government.
I thought it was interesting, too, the distinction in that group between a civil leader, a government leader, and a war leader. They were two different
That's people. Right. They had an organization of the fighting men known as the war leaders, and whenever it was necessary to go to war with any of their neighbors outside the five nations, well, the war leaders had control, although the civil control never got out of the hands of the civil government.
It's interesting, too, that they didn't have any compulsory military service.
They didn't have any compulsory military service. The fighting men were highly honored, and the youngsters were trained that it was necessary for them to defend their organization whenever the time came, and they considered the greatest honor in the world to fight for the benefit of the whole tribe. The warriors did, and that's the reason they were so highly respected. It was a volunteer organization entirely.
Well, Mr. President, isn't there some generalization you can draw from the fact that here was, in a way, an ideal setup, but they were destroyed? They were destroyed, of course, because of weapons that were superior to what they had.
That's true. They were all almost completely wiped out. There are very few descendants pure-blood descendants of any of these Indian tribes which made up the great Indian tribes which made up the population of what is now the United States and Canada. The Iroquois was the Iroquois Five Nations lasted about as long as any of them, but they were finally moved out of their property and it was taken away from them by the white people. And then the Cherokees and the Chickasaws in the southeast part of the United States were moved out to Oklahoma in the territories out there. The Sioux, the great Sioux tribe of the northern central plains, was finally wiped out, as were the Apaches in Arizona, New Mexico, and Southern California. Geronimo was a prisoner at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, in a little brick building that's still there. If you want to see it, they show it to you and brag about it. That's where Geronimo stayed. He was one of the great chiefs of Geronimo was.
Well, Mr. President, it seems certain that whatever ideal society you build up, if you're not prepared to defend it or cannot defend it efficiently, you're likely to be destroyed, and that's where conquerors always win out.
There isn't any question about that. That's what's happened to all the great governments of past history of the world. They were wiped out when they ceased. When the people themselves ceased to have an interest in the maintenance of their government and were not willing to fight for it.
Well, how permanent are conquests anyway? We've had so many conquests through history, and many countries have been conquered over and over again. I suppose they're permanent enough to do damage for the time.
Well, it depends on the policy which is pursued. One of the great empires to grow up after the Middle Ages was the British Empire, on which they said the sun would never set. But the objective of the British in building those empires seems to have been the proper education of the natives as well as their own people. And that's the reason for the British Commonwealth of Nations being so strongly knit together today.
And despite the blunders, the mercantile blunders that were done during the period of our Revolutionary
War. That's right. We taught them something. I think the American Rebellion, or Revolution, whichever way you want to look at it, was a great lesson to the British governing class who profited by it. And the Spanish never did profit by it. They lost their whole empire because of the cruelties of the manner in which they treated the native populations and the manner in which they treated any prisoners that they had. You see, all of Western Europe at one time was under the rule of the Spanish King and Roman Emperor, he was called, Holy Roman Emperor. And they were so mean and distasteful to the native peoples that Holland and a great many of the other governments over which they presided rebelled, and they never were able to hold them.
Well, that's fine. That covers all the main points we wanted to talk about. Well, the morning of December 26, 1960.
Yeah, all right. When that's typed,